Welcome. Good morning, good afternoon, all. Thanks for joining us today. We have our NICPED APE Collaborative for February. We'd like to welcome everyone today. We're going to chat about some PhD programs in adapted physical activity, adaptive physical education across the United States. In January, we had a similar discussion about master programs. And I thought that was really great, picked up a couple new ideas to incorporate into our program. So very excited here to learn about some of the different exemplary PhD programs throughout the United States. Again, these are not the only exemplary programs. These are just a few strategically throughout the US, but wanted to share to just to start exposing others, if you hadn't heard of some of these programs and some of the great things, and also just kind of what goes into getting a PhD in APE. As always, I want to thank our NICPED membership subcommittee. That's myself, Daniel Musser from Colorado, Jae Hyung from Wisconsin Whitewater, Heidi Ambrosius, Moreno Valley Unified School District, and Lainey Case from Chico State. Today we have four PhD programs. They are each going to speak for about 10 minutes, and then at the end we'll open it up for some Q&A. As always, we are live on NICPED Facebook. We'll post on NICPED YouTube, and this will be a session on the What's New in Adapted PE podcast. So without further ado, our first stop, we are going to visit Oregon State. We have Andy Pitchford and Sam Logan, who are going to chat about their program. So go ahead. Oh, share screen. Looks good. Floor is yours.
Perfect. Well, first, thank you, Melissa, for organizing this and for having us. I'm Andy Pitchford. I'm an assistant professor here in kinesiology, and I'm joined by my colleague, Sam Logan. Sam, do you want to say anything?
Yeah, sure. Just a quick intro. Sam Logan, associate professor of kinesiology at Oregon State as well. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to kind of hit on some of the key points of our program and some things that might make our program unique. Just as a quick overview, within our program, we have kind of three or four degree options. We, even though we're not talking about the master's program, we do have a master's of adapted physical education. That's a 14-month program, so a wraparound summer, fall, winter, spring, summer, that includes student teaching and results in licensure and an endorsement in adapted physical education in the state of Oregon. But then we also have a master's in kinesiology and a PhD in kinesiology that are research-based programs. In each of those, we have an adapted physical activity options that is 15 to 18 credits that specifically in adapted physical activity that can be distinguished on that student's record, either in the master's program or the PhD program.
Okay, and I'll talk just briefly about some of the interdisciplinary connections we have available here on campus. The adapted physical activity program and faculty really work with a wide breadth of different topic areas across the university. Just a couple of highlights. Some of my work is focused on collaborations with robotics and engineering. One of our other faculty members, Dr. Megan McDonald, her work has been collaborative with animal sciences and looking at physical activity in children and youth with disabilities and their family dogs. We have a great psychological science program in the College of Liberal Arts, and Dr. Kathleen Bogart is a great collaborator of several of ours in the area. She studies disability, disability pride, and she teaches a psychology of disability course that almost all of our students end up taking at one point or another. There's also the Center for Global Health. We've had some students work on a project, a community-based participatory research project in Botswana with disability education. The Haley Ford Center is also another resource that connects children and family and youth and aging and all kinds of different research topic areas from different people across the university.
Okay, so what makes our program probably unique is that we actually have five faculty in the adapted physical activity and education area. Chen Beamer is a clinical assistant professor. Sam Logan is an associate professor. Megan McDonald is a professor and is our school head, what other people might call a department chair, which is really a great asset for us because we have an administrator that really values our program. I'm relatively new assistant professor here, and Heidi Wiegus is a clinical associate professor. So, what's also unique about Oregon State compared to other institutions is our clinical professors are able to accept and advise graduate students just the same as our tenure track faculty. So we do have five faculty that can take on and engage doctoral students. And we all come from a slightly different backgrounds within these areas. And within that, we also have a very interactive research culture here. Within our adapted physical activity lab group, we have three independent labs, and I'll let Sam introduce the first two.
Yeah, so the first one is the one that I direct, the Disability and Mobility Do-It-Yourself Co-op. So the primary aim of this research program is to provide
Higher
mobility
turns.
experience, mobility experiences to young children with disabilities through modification of off-the-shelf battery-operated ride-on toy cars. And so we adapt them in a couple of ways to make them more accessible. And then we do a host of designing and implementing interventions to see the effect of those early mobility experiences, or what we're calling on-time mobility experiences for those kiddos. The next research lab I'll talk about is the Children and Youth with Disabilities Lab that is directed by Megan McDonald. I mentioned her previous project with children and youth with disabilities and physical activity and the family dog. I believe that that has expanded out to involve the family cat as well. So if you're interested in learning more, Google away some super fascinating stuff. And I'll pass it back to Andy for his lab.
Yeah, and the newest lab out of that group is the lab that I direct, the Inclusive Physical Activity Laboratory, which studies physical activity and physical fitness among populations with disabilities across the lifespan. And we're currently doing work that is collaborating with Fitnessgram to update the Brockport physical fitness test and hopefully integrate that into Fitnessgram to be one updated and accessible battery going forward. So a lot of our primary activities revolve around that project at the moment. In addition to our research, well, I'll say our PhD students, their first a priority is research within their scholarship. We do have a number of programs that support our local community and provide our graduate students with a lot of hands-on opportunities, both for leadership and for engaging with students. Our premier program, or what are the face of our program, is Impact, which started back in the 1980s with John Dunn, and is a Friday night swim and gym program that many other places have as well. We've also created Impact for Life, which is a transition program for older teens in young adults, where instead of coming on a Friday night, we facilitate them going out into the community still with some partnership from our students, including our undergrads, for them to be able to access that. And almost all of our graduate students are going to have a touch point with helping to manage or oversee at least one of these programs during their time.
Okay, and I'll briefly go over two of these three programs as well. We have the Adaptive Exercise Clinic that is physical activity experiences for adults with disabilities. We made the conscious decision a few years ago to change this from its own sort of isolated adaptive program, and it's now housed within our faculty, staff, fitness, and physical activity program context. So implementing it, trying to implement it more within the community itself. The second program is the Go Baby Go Oregon program. This is essentially the community outreach aspect of modifying ride-on-toy cars for children with disabilities to use. And that has been going on since I arrived here and still going strong. And Andy will talk about Special Olympics.
Yeah, and the last one, we've had a growing a relationship with Special Olympics Oregon. I oversee our Special Olympics health promotion for the state, and through that, we're able to engage all of our students in conducting health screenings and education events for Special Olympics Oregon. And there are opportunities to both do that as a service, but then to engage with that data on the back end for research purposes. And that's something that is relatively new, but is continuing to grow.
And as a potential graduate student, there are three funding mechanisms. You could be a teaching assistant, where you assist with the instructional delivery of specific courses, a research assistant, where you're funded on a faculty member's grant to execute some of those research activities specifically associated with that project. Or lastly, we often have fellowship spots available that is funded through the U.S. Department of Education and Office of Special Education. This latest one has been with a consortium of multiple institutions and universities. And the difference there is that there is no specific work assignment necessarily. It is a fellowship that funds your time as a graduate student to become a high-quality scholar in the field of adaptive physical activity.
So, if you are interested in learning more about the PhD program at Oregon State, you can see within our college and our unit, we do have multiple pages in the adapted physical activity area. And among our five faculty, three of us are currently recruiting PhD students. So if you are interested in learning more, please reach out to myself, to Sam, or to Jen Beamer. With that, I will turn it back over to Melissa. Thank you for your attention.
Yes, Sam and Andy, thank you so much. I think you're going to get applications from Garth and Barry and Dale any day
Yeah,
now.
they were knocking down the door to get into this.
All right, thank you so much. Next, we're going to hear from University of South Carolina. We have Andrea Taliaferro and Allie Bryan.
Awesome. Thanks, Melissa. Thanks, Andy and Sam, for presenting on your program as well. Melissa, thank you to you and to Nick Pede for this opportunity to share information about our program. So I'm Andrea Taliaferro, and I'm joined here by my colleague, Allie Bryan, and we're looking forward to sharing information on our PhD program at the University of South Carolina. And if I could, there we go. So first, we wanted to do a quick overview of our university, because the University of South Carolina is a pretty unique place. We are located in Columbia, South Carolina, which is the capital of South Carolina. Because of that, there's a lot to do around here, everything from sporting events to restaurants to arts and other activities. So it's a pretty cool place to be. The enrollments of the University of South Carolina right now is around 36,000 total students. Of those, we're looking at about 27,000 undergraduate students, just under 7,000 graduate students, and about 2,000 professional students. The University of South Carolina is a Carnegie Foundation recognized research and community engagement university. And because of that, you'll see, I think, throughout our program and the other programs at our university, that research and community engagement really are a key and focused on and emphasized highly. Sorry, it should not be playing music, but I'll just talk over it. So sorry about that. So our program, our PhD program, is housed within the College of Education. Within the College of Education, there are three departments, and we are a part of the Department of Developmental and Educational Science. So we also have many other courses and degree programs offered that students will be taking classes and have options to take classes with, including classes and courses in research and statistics, special education, counseling, and a whole variety of other topics. One of the strengths of our program as well, and I know Andy and mentioned this as well, one of the strengths of our program is we have a really nice core group of faculty dedicated with research specific in the area of adapted physical education and adapted physical activity. So this is just a handful of the faculty that we have in our PhD program. We do have more, and I would be remiss to not mention them, but I did want to focus on the fact that we have four faculty members right now with a specific interest and expertise and background in adapted physical education. So we have Mason Sir, who is a clinical assistant professor, Sally Medema, who's also a clinical assistant professor, Dr. Allie Bryan, who is a professor. She's also now the Associate Dean of Research in the College of Education, and then myself. So the nice part about this is that we can provide support to students. You have a good team of faculty members here to provide support in your research interests and in your teaching and professional interests. Everybody has research interests specific to adaptive PE. So I think we, as a team, provide a really nice core group of support to students in our program. We also have other graduate de degree programs, and I mention these because students in our PhD program may find themselves interacting with some of these programs, as well as our undergraduate PE programs. So, in terms of face-to-face programs, we have our PhD program and our MAT program. And then we have an online adapted physical education master's program and an online coaching education master's program as well. So, I want to quickly highlight some important information that might be unique to our program and things that really set the stage for our program and success in our PhD program. So our program of study and our PhD program in physical education is organized around four interrelated types of experiences: knowledge, teaching, scholarship, and service. Our program of study can be completed in a 3 or 4 year timeline. This is up to each of the students, per which timeline works best for them and will be discussed with their advisor and agreed upon. We do, if you do have an assistantship, we do have funding available for 4 years of a plan of study. Your program of study is adaptable to each person. It is individualizable. So each of our students takes about 15 to 18 hours in physical education core content classes, about 18 hours in research methods, 12 hours in a cognate. That this is really where our plan of study can really be individualized to each person and to your interests. So we've had students that have done their cognate in adapted physical education, adapted physical activity, special education, or even things like statistics and research as well. So there's many options here for your cognate, and really to individualize your set of skills and set yourself apart from your peers in the areas that you want to strengthen your expertise in. Students will then take 3 hours of research practicum and 12 hours of dissertation. We have a few benchmarks as well as you move through your plan of study. So in year one, students will take their qualifying exam. And then in year probably 2 or 3, depending on your timeline, students will complete their comprehensive assessment. And an option for our comprehensive assessment is a grant proposal. So you'll find that grant writing is emphasized very heavily in our program. Students get a lot of experience and hands-on experience with writing grants and submitting and proposing grants. There's a teaching requirement, so our students will find themselves involved in teaching and supervising students, potentially in our APE practicum. Right now, that practicum is out in schools. We hope to bring that back on campus again very soon. You might find yourself teaching and supervising student teachers or students in elementary or secondary methods courses and working alongside faculty who teach those courses. And then our students also have opportunities to teach courses independently and put those on your resume and really build up your CV in terms of your background and expertise in teaching. Our benchmarks in scholarship include successful completion of your dissertation, again, grant writing and submitting an externally reviewed grant, national and international presentations. Our students, one of their benchmarks is to co-author two research manuscript submissions. And again, you have multiple opportunities to work with faculty to co-author these research manuscripts and really get an idea of research and the process behind research. And then our students assist with journal article reviews. They'll assist a faculty member and get knowledge and information on how to successfully complete journal reviews in our field. So some notable features that set our program apart from others. Again, the faculty expertise in APE. We have a great set of faculty here and a really strong set of faculty with interest in APE that can really support students who have research and professional interests in that area. Our program really is focused on the apprenticeship model. We really are preparing our students to be faculty members, and our doctoral students really are treated like beginning faculty members when they're here. So they will have roles in research, teaching, and service. In terms of this apprenticeship model, you'll walk into your first job if you aim to be a faculty member, well prepared in the roles and the duties of a faculty member. Our program has a strong focus on grant writing. We have coursework related to grant writing. Again, the qualifying exam focuses has a grant writing option for it, where you will have a grant externally reviewed. Our program has a really strong focus on statistics and research. Our aim really is to prepare independent scholars. And again, we're here to prepare faculty members, but we're actually here to prepare you to be successful in your first faculty job. There are many opportunities to collaborate with faculty, both within our program and outside of our program. Many of our faculty are known as international and national experts, and they have many international and national connections with other faculty as well. And then a strength of our program is that we have connections, many connections to local schools and access to local schools. So that gives our students opportunities to get into the schools, not just to supervise and to interact with the local schools, but also for research interests. We do have opportunities to get into the schools and work with teachers and students in the schools. Some notable alumni and recent alumni of our program, and this is not an all-inclusive list, but some recent notable alumni include Emily Gilbert, who is currently an assistant professor at SUNY Cortland, Adam Pinnell, who is an assistant professor at Pepperdine University, Matthew Patey, who is an assistant professor at Bridgewater State University, Alex Stribbing, who is at Keene University, or Kane, and Sally Menema, who is actually here and one of our colleagues at the University of South Carolina. We do have competitive assistantships available. Generally, these are graduate teaching assistantships. So you would have a role in assisting and supervising and teaching courses alongside opportunities to do research with faculty members as a part of this assistantship. These assistantships cover some money towards tuition and a living stipend. And if anybody is interested in learning more about our assistantships, please reach out and we'll provide you with that information. And some important dates and deadlines, hoping that we have some folks that might be interested in applying and learning more about our program. Just keeping in mind upcoming dates here, the final deadline for applying for a fall start is April 15th. And right now, if you wish to apply, the application fee is waived for anybody who is starting in the summer, fall, or spring admission terms for next year. And thank you so much. I really appreciated the opportunity to present, and I'm hoping people have questions, but please don't hesitate to reach out. My email is listed here, and you can always reach me by email if you have any questions. Thank you, Melissa.
All right. Thanks, Andrea and Allie. Next up, we have University of Georgia, Nicole Kirk.
So hi, I'm Nicole Kirk. I work at the University of Georgia. I'm an assistant professor in health and physical education, sport pedagogy, and adapted physical activity. A little bit of an overview for you of UGA. We are the flagship University of Georgia. We are about 65 miles east, tiny bit northeast of Atlanta, and we are about, I don't know, 3 hours away from Andrea and Allie up in South Carolina. So we have an MS in addition to our PhD program with a focus in adapted physical education and activity. We also do have an MS program in APE that is kind of just getting off the ground right now. So we're happy to join the ranks of the MS and PhD folks in providing quality training and adaptive physical education. In addition to all those awesome things, we are also not bad at football. So if you're into football. So what research do we do here in adaptive physical activity and education at UGA? So I am the co-director of the Sport Instruction Research Lab here at UGA. along with a colleague who works in healthy lifestyle interventions for youth populations. We run a lot of different types of research programs, focus on lifespan physical activity. So things, my two main areas of focus that we do here at UGA are transition experiences of P12 students who are moving into community-based lifetime physical activity. In particular, we are interested in students who are moving from P12 services to university settings for physical activity. We've noticed that there are not too many resources at a lot of major institutions like ours for a quality and accessible physical activity options on campus, just like anybody else would have. So this is an area that we're interested in initially gaining information about experiences of disabled students trying to access those services on campuses, and eventually moving toward an intervention model where we can hopefully develop reverse inclusion-based programs that will specifically be designed for disabled students, but will be welcoming to the broader community as well. On the other side, we do talk a lot about adapted sport activities and adapted sport experiences. So recently, there are a couple of research programs or research studies that I'd like to highlight. The first one, you can kind of probably see the picture at the top of the page. If you can't, it's the National Wheelchair Association of India and the International Committee of the Red Cross, along with some colleagues from other universities. We were invited to perform a program evaluation for the International Committee of the Red Cross's rehabilitation and wheelchair sport programs. And in addition to that, we were able to conduct a pretty large-scale qualitative research study on the experiences of wheelchair basketball players from low and middle-income countries and areas of recent conflict regarding their health-related quality of life, their community and social belonging, and other benefits and lived experiences within wheelchair basketball. So we're pretty excited about that project. In addition, we like to do some program-based work here that impacts the local community. And so we host a lot of K-12 or P-12 field days, including visual impairment sport and wheelchair sport field days. So the lower picture is our 2023 spring field day, where we brought kids from all over the state of Georgia to work with the American Association of Adapted Sport Programs, which is a high school level competitive and like varsity letter generating sport program in wheelchair basketball, wheelchair football, and wheelchair handball. So we brought kids from the community to get often their first try at those sports. And then there was a student-led research project that came out of that related to the experiences of children and parents experiencing wheelchair sport programs, often for the first time. And that's about ready to go into press right now. In addition to that, we are moving more towards some intervention work, but it's all multi-method. So if you're interested in qualitative or quantitative research, we have both of those paths available to you, both with my expertise, I guess, but also with the involvement of our the co-director of the Cyril Lab, who is an interventionist kind of by training and by trade. In terms of coursework, we offer sport pedagogy is our guiding program, and so we offer APA, APE, and parasport program or coursework there. We also offer some coursework in advanced pedagogy and motor behavior. So if you're interested in learning more about those areas. Something that I do think sets us apart quite a bit is we have research coursework that might be a little bit more involved on the qualitative side than a lot of other programs. UGA is home to one of very few PhD granting programs specifically in qualitative research design. And so we have the ability to allow you to specialize and have a cognate in qualitative and mixed methods approaches. And there's even a certificate program. So while you wouldn't get your PhD in qualitative design, you could get a certificate in qualitative design where you focus on adapted physical activity research projects. And then we also have strong relationships with our special education faculty. And so we often kind of trade students back and forth who are able to take coursework in both discipline areas to expand their knowledge and gain a little bit more of a holistic idea of what's going on for disabled students in P12 settings. There's some additional opportunities. Like I said, we like to kind of combine programs and practice and research together. So in Athens Clarke County, our home county, there's a recent development of a P12 wheelchair sport program. And so there's the opportunity to gain coaching experience there and also conduct research with the athletes who are participating, the coaches who are participating, and the families who are served by that program. We're also involved with goalball, both on campus. We're developing a reverse inclusion goalball team here at UGA. So that's kind of programming oriented. But again, that kind of begs for a case study a little bit of what's going on with developing a goalball program. And we also work with Georgia Blind Sports Association out of Atlanta fairly frequently. And so there are research opportunities there that are as yet untapped, but I think there's plenty of time. We also have a lot of collaborative programs that we are able to offer because, like Andy at Oregon State and Sam at Oregon State, we are part of another OSEP grant, the other OSEP grant in adapted physical education at this point for the PhD level. And so there are opportunities to work across other universities, particularly Old Dominion University with Dr. Justin Hagel and University of Illinois with the guy you're going to hear from next. And then funding. Everybody likes to get funding to go to school. So we are funded by Project Kuiper so that like the opportunity that Andy spoke of earlier, this is a fellowship or considered a scholarship opportunity. So you wouldn't have a specific work assignment. However, it's a pretty good package. It's open to US citizens and permanent residents only, unfortunately. But it includes a full tuition waiver, cost of living stipend, and annual travel funding for domestic conferences. And then for people who maybe are not eligible for the CAPR funding because they are international students or non-permanent residents, we also have GA ships through the Department of Kinesiology. Those can come in a few different forms. All students at UGA are required to take an undergraduate PE class. So a lot of our students are funded by teaching those PE classes. And folks coming from APE and PE backgrounds tend to have a really broad and valuable skill set for those types of courses. So we've got a lot of luck with funding those. We also have swim and gym programs like everybody else. And so we have lab instructors who work with those. And we do have an adult disability practicum, and we have sourced the majority of the staff for that from APE, APA graduate students. So those are all opportunities. I think that's about everything that I have for you. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate being here. And if you want more information, you can access the QR code or the link that you probably can't click on because it's on my screen and not yours. But thank you so much.
Thanks, Nicole. And last but not least, we have University of Illinois, Wes Wilson.
All right. Hopefully everyone can see my screen. Awesome. I feel like that's the thing that we always say when we start these types of presentations. Thank you so much, Melissa. I'm Wes Wilson. I am assistant professor at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and I'm happy to talk a little bit about our offerings at the PhD level for adapted physical activity, adapted physical education. I wanted to start real quickly talking about the larger organizational unit here at the University of Illinois. We are housed in the College of Applied Health Sciences, and we are rebranding our department name to Health and Kinesiology. We used to be Kinesiology and Community Health, but now going forward will be Health and Kinesiology, which is a little bit more recognizable in the field, at least in the US. We are situated specifically in the pedagogy and physical activity track of the PhDs that are available in our college. I don't want to spend too much time talking about that because I want to get into our pedagogical kinesiology laboratory, which is the centerpiece of our doctoral training for students who come to work with us. And so, as you can see on this website, we have a number of resources to help people that may be interested in pursuing a PhD in adaptive physical education and pedagogy. We have four major research strands that our lab looks at. We look at PE workforce development and teacher socialization. So much of that work is qualitative. However, we do large national sample quantitative work regarding those types of workplace experiences as well. We looked at the subjective experiences of children in physical education and physical activity settings, including children with and without disabilities. We look at the application of a variety of different motivational theories in the PE/APE settings. And then finally, our work has extended into social and emotional learning across the board for both children with and without disabilities. And so this lab is possible because we have so many faculty at this university who are contributing to our mission, which I will show you next. And I must say, I'm really proud of our logo. We had this logo professionally done. And so we're going to be branding it quite a lot going forward. But our lab's larger objectives are, I'm not going to read them all, but they're on a website that we can provide Melissa and members of the this collaborative. But largely, we want to seek to advance scholarship of through our faculty and our doctoral student research, with the goal of supporting a favorable future for teachers and learners in physical education and activity environments, including those with lived experiences of disability. We also are expanding that to look at the socialization of doctoral students who go through our APE doctoral training program or our PE doctoral training program. Our lab is maybe not unlike some of the other labs that you've heard about today. Our organizational structure is pretty simple. I am one of the co-directors of the PKL, along with my colleague in pedagogy, Dr. Kevin Andrew Richards. We do have a grad student lead who's a doctoral student who helps oversee the lab projects that are happening, helps send emails out to our research teams to keep everyone on the same page. And then a majority of our doc students are running their own projects, and they're overseeing either master students who are working underneath them in some capacity or our undergrad research team. And so we try to follow a very logical flow to make sure that we get the projects done and that all of our support is getting what they need to be successful throughout the research process. Also on our website, we talk about all the faculty members and our current students that are in the program. So if you're interested in learning about some of that information, you can go to our website. You can see all of our faculty that are associated with our lab, as well as students, and learn from their student experiences. I just want to highlight a few here. So Dr. Kim Graber is our department chair now, but she was instrumental in setting up this lab starting about two plus decades ago. Amy Woods is also another pedagogy researcher. She's also moved into admin as the associate dean of faculty affairs. But there, we get a lot of support because they're in admin roles in our college and at our department level, which is really nice because a lot of times pedagogy and APE programs aren't the focal point of decisions that are being made. So we're very fortunate for that. I mentioned Dr. Kevin Andrew Richards. He is my collaborator and he's my co-director of our lab. And so he does a lot of work in pedagogy. He's also starting to shift over to some more APE work as well because of our working relationship over the last 10 or 15 years. And that's what I looked like before the pandemic. And I'm also one of the co-directors of the lab, as I mentioned. We also have two other PhD level clinical assistant professors who teach a lot of the pedagogy coursework, but it's very nice because they can also serve on dissertation committees, which gives us six PhD level faculty that are supporting our lab and our APE doctoral program. So I mentioned those four research strands earlier. If you're interested in learning more, on our website, we have citations for work that falls underneath each of those four research strands. So you can go there and find work. If one of those areas is particularly interesting to you, you can find out more information there. Finally, I wanted to end on how you might get involved if you are interested in pursuing a PhD at the University of Illinois with us. So as Dr. Kirk mentioned a moment ago, I am the other guy that she was referring to about collaboration across universities. So Project CAPER is one of our primary funding sources, although we do have really competitive packages that are associated with being a GRA or a GTA. And we have never been turned down a doc student that we wanted to admit because of assistantship competition. Right. We also are, we feel pretty pretty lucky because we just have moved into our new physical lab space, which includes both Kevin and my office, as well as a separate qualitative research room where you can do interviews or do work that requires some quiet. We have two large storage areas. We have a conference room that's hooked up with all the AV resources, as well as a large room that serves as our bullpen for doctoral students that can accommodate up to 15 doctoral students, and they each have their own cubicles and desk and things like that. And so we're all in one space, which is really nice, especially with a lab as large as ours, because then we are able just to see each other regularly every single day and not have to walk across our building in order to have those really frequent interactions, right? And so we feel really grateful for that. We're looking to absorb another room that's attached to our lab that we'll use as a data collection center so that we can bring participants onto campus more easily, as well as having a separate library in the building that we have a lot of old books and like VHS resources that are associated with our field. And I should also mention we have our own private bathroom in our lab, which is, I think, the coolest thing. But like I said, we feel very blessed to have all these types of resources that we can use to help train our doc students who come through our programs. We also have about 20 undergrads per year sign up to take credit with us in our research projects. And so we have opportunities for doc students to get mentorship of undergrad researchers and help start building those competencies that they'll need once they take faculty positions once they're done. And so that's sort of all that I have. I hope that I didn't have a nice fancy a slideshow, but hopefully this information is helpful. I can provide any of these links as necessary, Melissa. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, at this time, we will open it up to for questions for any of the panelists. All right, I'll start first since maybe we're a little shy. What my question is, what is the biggest challenge that you all have with your PhD program? Y'all just shared all the wonderful things.
We have no challenges. We're doing great. I think the hardest challenge as a new faculty for me, I'm in my fourth year now, and came in during COVID, so that didn't really help matters, but was actually getting the ball rolling with graduate students. So UGA has a long tradition around both health and physical education and adaptive physical education. However, faculty had not been as active, and there had been a kind of a moment there from about 2016, 2017 to 2020 where there wasn't a research faculty in adapted PE here at UGA. And so this is probably a very site-specific thing, but establishing all of the connections that I needed in order to start, doing meaningful research here in a place where it hadn't really been happening in the same way for a little while, took a bit of doing. But I feel like for me, we've gotten to a really great place. We recently graduated our first MS thesis student who went on to a doctoral program in special education, not APE, but special education at University of North Carolina. And so, I feel like now we have graduate students in the door. We have doctoral students here right now, and we're building something pretty exciting.
Great, thank you. Others want to share?
I'll point out that this is a both a challenge, but is based off of something that's very positive. We've had a long history here of OSEP funding, particularly at the doctoral level, which is absolutely a great thing to have. But there is a cyclical nature to it where you're not always sure when that next grant is going to happen or whether you're going to have it. So sometimes it feels like we go through these rush to recruit students and then have these periods where we can't take on as many if we've already filled those spots. spot. So we are working on some ways to make ourselves a little more independent of that system, but it's still absolutely a great thing to have, even with that challenge.
Barry, you have a question.
Nice presentation, everyone. And you talked about preparing faculty members. So can you talk a little bit about the challenge if this new faculty member gets a position at a tier two university or a small college, and they may have to teach 9 to 12 semester hours per semester, you know, 12 units, 9, 12 units. And how do they carve out scholarship? And what are some of the mentoring or the conversations you might have with them, or just open it up to anyone? Just how do we combat that?
So I don't mind jumping in here on this. Andrea shared a list of our most recent APE alumni. And if you saw the list, most of them are at
right.
the type of institution you're describing, you know, with Emily at Cortland, you know, Alex at Keene, and so on and so forth. And so when they're doing their dissertation and they're in their data collection phase here, we are really calculated with the fact that most likely they're going to end up at that level of institution. And so we tell them to collect enough data so that they can write off that for about, you know, a few years while they're learning to course prep, getting, you know, enculturated to that new role. So write off that while you're prepping the new courses, making those community relations that Nicole spoke about.
Another strategy that we always try to pass along is building a really collaborative network during your doctoral training. So having other scholars that are at the same level that you, in their PhD studies at other universities, connecting them with faculty at other universities to build that network up. So that when, if you do end up in a job that's high teaching load and you are wanting to continue with your scholarship, you have that research support network of collaborators who you know you can share some of the intellectual and cognitive demand that goes along with scholarship like that.
Yeah, just piggybacking off of what Wes said, I think that for both the MAMC grant that Andy and Sam are on and the CAPR grant, one of the features of that is that we do not only allow for, but kind of expect inter-university collaboration between both scholars on the program and then also faculty members. So all of us, I can only speak for CAPR because I'm only on CAPR, but all of us are overseeing projects with, you know, scholars from multiple universities. So right now, one of Wes's students and one of Justin's students are doing data analysis with an old data set that I happen to have. And so one of my scholars will jump in and collaborate on the manuscript construction once it's in a place for that. And I'm kind of overseeing the whole project. So they have the opportunity to not just hear the voice of their own mentors, but others in the field, and they can kind of grow up with peers who can support their scholarship if, you know, one person ends up in an R1 and another person ends up at a comprehensive university. The other thing I would say is that, you know, if you have community-based programs, they can always generate research, right? So if you're able to serve the community, there's always research to be had from that. Even if your primary purpose isn't research, it is in fact providing a valuable service to disabled folks and family members in your community.
I'll also add one other point is, I think it's important in the mentorship process to, through participating in a variety of roles during the PhD training, through research, through teaching, through community programming, working on some of those time management tasks strategies early on during that period, so that you then enter into that first a position with the skills that you need to handle a lot of competing interests. And I know we all struggle with aspects of time management, but building that into the mentorship process, I think, is an important step to prepare students for whatever situation they're going to be in that first job.
Yeah. I would Think, Barry, I know you have a question, but since you asked one already, I'll jump
No,
in here.
I'm done.
I would think the one thing that all of your experience, and this is I certainly did the last few years before I retired, was recruiting strong applicants for the PhD. There were fewer and fewer people who wanted to go on for their doctoral degree. And I'm not sure what I could do to increase that, but I really encourage you. I got many of my best doctoral students by going to conferences and recruiting them. Don't wait for applicants to come in, go after them and look at the presentations, look at the posters, and go up and talk to them and then tell them about your program. I'm very, very disappointed this year. I'm serving on OSEP review panel. They're not funding doctoral programs this year in Adapted. And so I'm serving on the related services panel. And that disappoints me.
Us too.
Could you speak to that? How do you all recruit? How do you find your PhD candidates?
So specifically to Dale's point, both MAMC and CAPR will be recruiting at Shape America this year. There will be an actual booth in the actual giant room with all the gopher stuff and gator skin balls and can jam and research posters. So we're really happy that that's going to happen because it does give a landing space for people to walk by, grab a stress ball, ask some questions, see a QR code, hopefully file it away later. So that is a little bit more, I would say, aggressive than a lot of the AP EAPA programs have been in recruiting for doctoral students, that, to my knowledge, and I don't know what all is going on everywhere. But in addition to that, I don't know, I think it's a lot of turning over rocks sometimes. You kind of put out the word to anyone you can. Obviously, we've talked with NCFEED many times, NFAPA. Trying to make sure that the word is out there. And then also going to state conferences and things like that. There's a really interesting disconnect that I don't know if other people have noticed, but I have that up to a degree, we train people for practical roles, right? We train people to be practitioners often through the master's program. There are MS thesis programs that are doing both, but a lot of the time we're training practitioners. And so it's kind of unsurprising to me that we don't have tons of people who are interested in research when that's not the focus of any of our preliminary training up until this point, for the most part, in the field. So, something that I'm looking to do personally is incorporate more about kind of like APA career day into even my foundations classes that I teach for undergrads so that they have an idea that, yes, I can be a physical educator, but if that's not the fit for me, or if that's not my forever fit, that I can kind of go back and pursue research so that I can contribute to furthering the field in a different way than maybe I would have set out to do as a 18 to 20-year-old.
Yeah,
I'm just.
sorry, someone else.
Yeah, this is John Drummond. So I was going to speak up. I'm a little bit different. I've just been listening to what everybody says because I come to this later in life. I'm a retired military officer. I've got lots of friends missing parts, from their military service. And I came into a kinesiology program here at Kentucky and then kind of stumbled into working with kids with neurodevelopmental disabilities. Through the LEND program and through the Human Development Institute that was here. Nicole, I'll look for you. I'll be at Shape. I've got something they accepted there for a round table. But I think there are some populations out there that maybe get overlooked. So if we take Kentucky, as I got into the neurodevelopmental disabilities, for example, they've got 1/15 of the pediatricians, of the behavioral pediatricians needed in this state, for example, in Kentucky, to treat all the kids with autism, for example. And there are places in rural areas in this state where it's taking people 4 years to get a full-up medical diagnosis and be able to start getting the benefits for those things. On the other hand, I'm also aware of some things going on around the country where we've got a lot of people after 20 years of war that are going to have disabilities that they're going to have to work with and through for a lifetime. And, in that audience, I don't know, has quite crept in yet to all the adaptive physical activity and physical education that might be needed for those adults as they go forward in life. And so I think there's a need out there, but I don't think it's well enunciated. I don't think it's well popularized. I think there's a lot of stuff that's still hidden away and, you know, hidden back. So anyway, I mean, those are just some of the thoughts I have sitting here as a non-traditional PhD student who's, you know, going through the process right now and about to get started on my dissertation research.
Great. Any additional, Wes, I think you had something there that you were going to add, that you're going to add.
Yeah, I think so. Speaking to the larger challenge of recruiting highly motivated and qualified doctoral students is that I'm getting a lot of emails asking for remote programming. And, you know, we are not set up to do that in any way. We don't have the capacity to make that a good experience for the student at all. And that is a problem. And then particularly those with teaching experience, having them come back to be on a doctoral stipend, even though they are more competitive now than they've ever been in our field, that is a real challenge. And so I think we're seeing our doc students coming in with less and less teaching experience. And so then, you know, how are we providing that additional exposure when they're in the doc programs? And so these are things that I think about as far as like how, where I can recruit students and who is most likely to be willing to embark on sort of a wild journey to get a PhD and like not knowing where they're going to end up post PhD. It's challenging.
In terms of recruiting, serving on the review panels of these grants frequently, you learn that OSEP has a focus at one point in recruiting minority individuals, which is great. And there are websites, Facebook sites that you can go to as a faculty member that specialize in graduate students going on for graduate training, whether it be at master's or doctoral level, and you can put an announcement in there and it's distributed all over the country. And I don't think APA people use those sites. I mean, I never did. And, you know, that was a weakness of mine. And so I would go after those sites and make sure you put an announcement and describe. A lot of times they won't necessarily know what adaptive physical activity is. So have a brief description of what the heck it is. You might get some, you know, recruitment done.
Dale, could you put that in the chat? Whatever that website was, I would love to.
Yeah, I didn't say it was a specific site. Oh. I would search on minority graduate students or something like that. Put in some key terms. If I went back to any old grants, and again, I may be able to help you. I'm a reviewer in a couple of weeks, and I've got to read 8 proposals, and I would hope some of them have those sites in it. And if that's the case, then I could do that. I don't remember the specific sites, but there are multiple ones.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining. A big thank you to those who discussed their PhD programs. Our next APE collaborative will be coming up here in March, and we're going to have a preschool motor team. It's going to be on, let's see, March 15th at 11 a.m. Pacific. So that'd be 1 o'clock Central, 2 p.m. Eastern. We're going to have a preschool motor team come and chat about how they collaborate. So it's going to be the PT, the OT, the APE, SLP, and how they work together in the preschool motor team. And then the second portion will open up for Q&A, and then hopefully even a chance to discuss some hot topics that are going on in APE. Got some interesting things, like I know Dale even mentioned the OSEP grants. I think there's some interesting things happening there that might be worthy of discussion, like they're not doing the K this year. So I think that's kind of, very interesting for the field. Instead, they're doing R related service, which is not great for APE because we do not qualify for that one. So those are some of the additional things that we can discuss in addition to the preschool motor team. So hope to see everyone then in March. Thank you again to our panelists. Excellent job, you all. And hopefully some of you consider getting your PhD in APA or APE. All right. Till next time. Bye, all. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.